I don't think we met before, but I'm the referee on this field.
Leinster could offer me $5 million a year, I wouldn't go.
It is Tommy Moore!
Rugby Weekly.
Little reverse pass.
Magic! Hello, everybody, and welcome to your Friday episode of the 42 Rugby Weekly. We are on the eve of Ireland's visit to Cardiff for their Six Nations encounter. My mic just fell over with Wales. It's showbiz. We're going to roll. We're under time pressure. And Murray Kinsella is in Dublin Airport for the second time today. So, Murray, you're having an absolute day of it. Let it all out. What was the story?
Well, I'm not under direct time pressure myself now at the moment because I'm not flying until 8:30 p.m. as it turns out. I was up at 4 a.m. this morning. My flight was supposed to go at 6:15 a.m. to Bristol. And by 7:15 a.m. I knew there was something badly wrong, and they just announced that it was cancelled because of weather. It was one of those little propeller planes, you know, they're like regional flights. So maybe it was a safe option from them. But it was a bit of a scramble for everyone and a few Ireland fans there as well, trying to figure out how they're going to get across. In the end, Aer Lingus' solution was to get me across on Sunday morning and back on Sunday night, which wouldn't have worked, obviously. So I'm getting over later tonight, but it's been a bit of an eventful day. I left the airport. I was like, oh, okay, I have loads of hours to kill. I'll head on home. And then there was massive gridlock on the M50. I think there was an accident. So hope everyone's okay. So I turned around and came back, and I ended up going for a run in Poppentry Park there in Ballymun because I just needed to blow off some steam. I was a bit frustrated at that point, and it was lovely. I've never been there. I've never been to that park. It was beautiful. There was a young fella fishing in the pond, which he thought he was going to catch some hake, but he obviously didn't manage. It was a very small pond. But a bit of a strange day, Gav, to be honest. And yet here I am, and I'll be flying to Bristol, touch wood, this evening, and I'll be seeing two Ireland teams play on Saturday and Sunday in Cardiff and Bristol.
Sounds like an absolute shit show of a day. You've done well to make the most of it. I must admit, when I was on Instagram earlier today and saw on your story that you were in Poppentry, I was unfamiliar with the area, and I thought, at least he's made it to Wales. Just sounds like a kind of a twee English language Welsh town name or something. They've got him to the general ballpark of Cardiff anyway, but not so.
I'd never heard of it either, and I like discovering new places, and it was lovely, and everyone there was real sound. So it was just what I needed as I was about to absolutely blow my lid in frustration. So all has ended well, and I've just come back into the airport, second time of asking. The Ireland A team have all just arrived in as well. Just had a quick chat with Mike Prendergast. They're very excited about Sunday. They're very excited about the team they've picked. The weather forecast is not great, but as we'll get into, it's a big old team, so they should be all right regardless of the conditions.
We have four Irish out halves in action over the weekend, over those two games that you mentioned, Mer. One of whom is not Ross Byrne, who it has been confirmed today will join Gloucester at the start of next season. So he'll finish this campaign, naturally enough, with Leinster, where he's won a Champions Cup and four Pro 14 titles over a decade. I think he made his debut in 2015 for Leinster. 22 Irish caps as well, including a couple of memorable moments in green, like that winning penalty against Australia in 2022, for example. It had been flagged and widely reported during the week, I think, initially in the British media. Apologies, I can't think of the specific publication now. But we had a question around then, actually, from one of our listeners, Robin. And Robin said, I'm very saddened to hear that Ross Byrne is leaving Leinster at the end of the year. I think Ross has been treated pretty poorly by my fellow Leinster fans, who forget that he got us to two Champions Cup finals when Sexton was injured and after his retirement. He's the only currently playing 10 for any province who has managed to do that. I don't think he's been given the kudos that he deserves. He gets unfairly blamed for not winning those finals, but Sexton, our greatest ever 10, also wasn't able to guide us over the line in the last 2 years. I'm excited by Prendergast and Frawley coming through, like every other Leinster fan, but without Ross, our experience at 10 is very limited. My question for the pod is, should Leinster be relying on a crop of talented but inexperienced 10s in Prendergast and Frawley? And should Irish rugby be allowing that quality and experience to leave the country completely? All the best, Robin.
Great email. I would absolutely agree with a lot of what Robin says there around Ross Byrne and how he's been perceived. And I think, and I've said it quite a bit in the pod, very unfairly in many instances, both with Ireland and with Leinster. But to come around to the question around whether it should be happening, maybe not, given Ross Byrne is only 29 and all that experience that you cited and that Robin's email cites. But this is the reality of the situation. Ross Byrne is a guy who wants to be starting a kind of frontline out half. It's not the case in Leinster anymore, and it was. And it must be frustrating to see Sam Prendergast come in and take over that mantle all of a sudden, really, as it's happened. But that's the reality of the situation. So he's got to look out for himself and his best interest and the best for his career. And right now it's to leave Leinster and go on a new adventure, which is very exciting. The destination is a surprise. Certainly not him leaving isn't a surprise at all. It was kind of, you know, very apparent from early in the season. He had suitors elsewhere, Leicester, Montpellier. There was a couple other clubs, as far as I'm aware, interested in him. But Gloucester seem to be a club on the rise. They've been quite resurgent, really, in the last year, 18 months. And that'll be exciting for him to get a fresh start, because it has kind of... He's still been very centrally involved with Leinster this season, we should say, but mainly off the bench and certainly not as the kind of franchise out half anymore. And that would have been frustrating for him. So I think from his personal point of view, it makes sense. And then just from a RFU/provincial point of view, you've just got to weigh up all the... even things like financial factors here, and a 29-year-old with that level of experience commands a good salary. So to really keep someone like that in your system, whether it's in Leinster or in a different province, it'll cost you a good bit of money. And that's even ignoring the fact of whether he even wanted to move to a different province, which, as far as I'm aware, wasn't a possibility at all here. So, yeah, I absolutely understand the framing of the question, but I just think this is the way sometimes it goes. It doesn't happen very often in Irish rugby with players leaving. He hasn't been in the Ireland mix, and, you know, others have accelerated there, especially with Prendergast. And I suppose you can kind of see, and he can see that, you know, his prospects there aren't the best. So, yeah, all in all, I think the decision makes sense from all angles, really. And yet I don't think that takes away from what Ross Byrne has done with Leinster and with Ireland at times. He's had some good games in green and was at a World Cup in 2023, which is relatively recently. But I think he'll be well remembered by the majority of Leinster fans. I do think there's a lot of respect there, from certainly from people who go to games and don't really understand what a player like that brings to a team. And it's not just flash stuff. It's really important solidity and game management and some absolute clutch kicks off the tee as well and out of hand. So I think he'd be pretty well remembered, and it's a shame that it's worked out this way, but that's the way the game goes. You know, Sam Prendergast is the guy now, and he's taken over as number one there, and it's similarly exciting that he's going to kick on, and maybe it opens up space for others. Harry Byrne's currently on loan. He's contracted Leinster next season, and he could end up staying there. There's interest from all the other provinces in him, but he could end up staying there because it opens up a place above him on the pecking order. Kieran Foley, he's starting for Ireland A this weekend, and things have maybe stalled a little bit for him. But again, you know, his position in that pecking order is probably improved by this as well.
Did you say that there's interest from all of the other provinces in Harry Mer?
As far as I understand, I think all three of them, as far as I understand, have been, are looking for another out half ahead of next season. And obviously Irish qualified is ideal in the provinces. So as far as I understand, yeah, they are all interested. And yeah, it sounds like he'll have a decision to make. His contract with Leinster does run until 2026. So, you know, there's obviously a binding nature to that, but the RFU will want him playing lots of rugby, and he'll want to play lots of rugby given the brilliant experience that he's having in Bristol at the moment, and is going to play off the bench for Ireland A in Bristol on Sunday as well.
Just briefly before we move on from Ross Byrne, I wonder to what extent the new rules around central contracts and the 30% payment by Leinster would contribute towards his departure. Now, I would firstly acknowledge, as you have, that like Ross Byrne is the personality type who at 29 with a decade of senior rugby under his belt is ambitious. He doesn't want to be a bit part player. He wants to go somewhere and be the star. And as you said, Gloucester are pretty resurgent. They're third in the premiership right now. They look like they might be in the title mix there over the next couple of years. So this is a really enticing opportunity for Byrne, almost irrespective of his situation in Leinster. But maybe in the past, Leinster might have been able to just almost throw money at the problem within reason, where you're able to just match the offer of a premiership club or just about make an offer that's just about enticing enough to keep a player there where they do remain a bit part player. Maybe that's no longer an option at the moment, Mer, just with the way the climate is, I guess, in terms of that change to central contracting.
That's absolutely the reality, Gav, and this was going to become transparent over a longer period rather than just when they announced that tweak. It was going to take a while to kick in, but I would say this is a direct example of that. You know, you've had to absorb, it's only 30%, people might say, but add up all those 30% on pretty decent central contracts and it's a hefty enough chunk of that provincial budget to come back under your remit, if that makes sense. So I think, yeah, this will be the reality a little bit more, that player who's no longer a first choice with Leinster, you know, they won't be able to offer them the potentially the salaries that they have in the past to keep them. So that will be part of the picture. And obviously within Irish provinces, they can't outbid each other. So that kind of is a different issue. But here you've had foreign clubs interested. And listen, I don't know whether Leinster, I don't know how much of a play they made to keep Ross Byrne, but yeah, I think you've hit the nail on the head there with that, Gav. It was always going to have an impact on Leinster, and yes, they'll still be able to bring in some top NIQs and keep a lot of the best players in Ireland, but I think the depth chart will be taking a bit of a hit.
We had the team news for Wales against Ireland during the week. We're starting with Ireland. You've got Jamie Osborne in there starting at fullback. You have Tom Clarkson getting a start at tight head, which is brilliant for him. 7 changes in all. And Dan Sheehan named to captain this Ireland team against Wales. And before we get to the Welsh team, I just want to get your impressions of Ireland's 23, or what stood out to you, what excites you about that, because I haven't spoken to you about it in a couple of days.
I think it's very exciting selection. I think it's a very sensible selection because you've got the freshness of the changes, you've got the motivation for several players coming in with big chances to prove points, like Jamie Osborne getting his Six Nations debut at fullback, and he's had the frustration not featuring in the first 2 weekends. He's going to want to make a point. You've got Thomas Clarkson, as you say, making his first test start, having made a good impact off the bench so far, but this is the next step up. You've got Gus McCarthy coming back into the squad again, a really exciting 21-year-old player with 2 caps. Jack Boyle making his debut off the bench. And especially given all the chat we've had around front rows and Irish depth charts in those positions over the last few years, that's really exciting to see. Cian Prendergast coming into the matchday squad again, which kind of goes under the radar a little bit because other guys that I've mentioned there, but he's one who's going to really want to make a big impact, and he offers the flexibility of playing 6 and 8, and it makes sense in that way. As well as Sheehan captaining, I think it's a really interesting selection because obviously there are other leaders around him. O'Mahony would have been the obvious choice as captain for this game. Tadhg Byrne, skipper, you know, Ringrose has done it, Jack Conan even with Leinster, so he has all that around him. But for me, Dan Sheehan along with Doris is a really symbolic player for this team. Like, I feel like this is their team. They're the guys who came through under Andy Farrell and have emerged as the key players. They're in their mid-20s and they're going to be around for the next, you know, the next big chapter of this team, and they set standards with their play as well. And yeah, it's a pretty kind of caps a pretty remarkable journey for him, from missing out in the Leinster Academy to nearly getting released altogether, but sticking around and training away with them even while on no contract at all and being unpaid, and eventually becoming, yeah, right up there as the best hooker in the world. And he does seem like a calm presence on the pitch as well, and he's very confident in his play now and certainly leads by example. So I think all those freshish kind of selections or captaincy decisions are exciting, and yet there's a real good core of continuity to the team because they don't want to give up the momentum, and they don't want to in any way look like they're disrespecting Wales or not treating this fixture with the seriousness that it really does deserve, because Cardiff has not been a happy hunting ground for Irish rugby teams. And I know this is different, and I know Wales are the major underdogs and it will be a massive shock, but you got to go and win in front of a pretty feral full house with the roof closed, with Cardiff just willing their team to show signs of real life, and with that bounce of a new coach. So the result will decide it, but looking at that selection, I think they've got it bang on, the Irish coaches.
We often hear Bernard Jackman on the Subscribers Pod talk about a team's why, and I think the selection of Sheehan as captain is at least tangential to that, because you could have gone with O'Mahony, as you say, you could have gone with Tadhg Byrne and a number of other more experienced players or older players, frankly. But I think giving Sheehan the captaincy for the first time and knowing what those milestones mean to this group of players and to the coaches and the credence that they lend little milestones like that, it's almost like just an additional little incentive for Ireland. They obviously want to win the game regardless. I'm not saying they were taking their eye off the ball or anything like that, but just I think it you know, there'll be chests out in that dressing room as Sheen walks out, and it'll be lads looking to make it a special day for him, the way they did with, I think, Osborne in South Africa, debutants, 50 a cap, 100 cap, that kind of thing. There's a real sense of camaraderie and supporting that guy. So to give it to Sheen for the first time, I think just gives him maybe a fraction of a percent beyond if you were to give it to an Omani or a Byrne, who've sort of been there and done it either at provincial or test level. And you wrote obviously brilliantly about his resilience in coming back to this point as well, Murr, during the week.
And those milestones are part of the reason why it is a sensible selection. Because, like, obviously the big danger here would have been that, I know this Irish group don't really allow it to happen, but you just slightly take your mind off it because you're such big favourites and you've got momentum. You're thinking Grand Slam is on. But those factors, it's very internal motivation for Ireland and always is. But, like, making sure that Jack Boyle has a great debut that he remembers. Making sure that Jamie Osborne has a great first Six Nations debut that he remembers. Same with Clarkson getting his first test start. They are major motivations. That's kind of corny as it maybe sounds to us on the outside, but that is what motivates this group. And they talk about, we focus on ourselves, and they're the things, I suppose, with their psychological edge, they'll have focused on this week. And definitely they'll be really important. Because, yeah, Six Nations is different. For those guys who've played in November tests and against big teams and done really well, it was great and all, but it is just a step up, even against a weak Welsh team, to be in the Six Nations, the tournament you grew up watching. And I can only imagine how excited some of those guys are that we've mentioned.
I think it's one of the most potent elements of the environment that Farrell has cultivated, is that sense of needing to do right by a guy who is having a special day. And it extends to their families. Like, how often do the players talk about it? And you'd hear about it from behind the scenes as well. It's not just about the guy taking the field. It's making sure that that guy's family, the people who have gotten him to this point, also have a day that they can remember for the rest of their lives. And you're right, maybe it might sound corny to people from the outside, but it works on the inside, and it works in terms of what translates to the field.
And lastly, we're going to get maybe 60 or whatever minutes of Dan Sheen, which is really exciting as well, because his forms, I know he didn't get on the ball against the Scots, but he made some brilliant defensive interventions. And likewise with Jack Conan, he's a different number 8 to Cale Doris, who's just a wrecking ball. He kind of does every single thing on the pitch, and he's relentless in every single action. Conan, you know, his primary role is a ball carrier, but he's worked really hard in his turnovers and his barge and his line out, and he's in great form too. So seeing them from the off as well is another reason to be excited.
The Welsh captain, and I would say unquestionably the most special player in their squad, Jack Morgan, actually shifts across to blindside for this one, where with Tommy Raffel coming in at openside, and we'll return to that in a moment. Ellis Mee makes his test debut on the left wing, with Josh Adams ruled out through injury. So if people haven't seen much of me, he plays for the Scarlets. He's English born, actually. I think his mother's from Newport. Bit of a hot stepper, Murr, like you've seen him in URC action. Really nice footwork. Kind of a rangy guy, still quite lean given he's only 21, but an exciting prospect for Wales for sure. And then changes in the front row as well. You've got three guys who are either making their first Six Nations start of the campaign or first Six Nations start overall. So Matt Scherer clearly feeling the need to freshen things up. I didn't even mention the fact he's brought Gareth Anscombe straight in at 10 and Max Llewellyn as well at 13, although that had been well signposted. And with that in mind, Murr, like, maybe to start with the back row, it kind of feels like they've looked at the success that England got against Ireland in the first half of that game, at least, with three open sides, and they feel as though they can, in some ways, replicate that. Their first duty of call, so to speak, go after Irish ball, try and slow things down. At that point, then, you have 70-odd thousand Welsh people who'll get involved, you know? So, like, it feels like a cornerstone of the performance that Wales are trying to put together, at least.
Well, Tommy Raffel is one of the best jackals anywhere, really, isn't he? So he's gonna have moments where he gets, you know, in Ireland's teeth, and he gets those turnovers he's so famous for. And when you put him and Jack Morgan together, there's a lot of abrasive quality there. I agree with you, Jack Morgan. I can't wait to watch him play in the flesh. He's an outstanding rugby player, and you almost feel sorry for him at times that he's been in a relatively poor team. So I think that, you know, overall, it's just a more solid team just to look at on paper. It makes a lot more sense than what they'd been picking before. There's good combinations there. You know, you've got the experienced halfbacks. You've got the Scarlets back three. You've got Thomas and Max Llewellyn, who was previously at Cardiff, in the pack as well. There's just proven combinations there, players who know each other. So they'll get a click, because they are going to try and change things in a very short space of time. I doubt they'll drastically come up with massive, crazy new plans, but it'll be more solid, I think, from them. There's just a sense in having an out half in your team rather than Ben Thomas trying to fill in there. Gareth Anscombe has done some damage against Ireland in the past. People remember his early chip over the top for, I'm forgetting the name of the centre, Hadley Parks, early in one of those games in Cardiff. And he's very skillful, but also has that kind of nous of managing games. And he's been playing well for Gloucester alongside Williams. So again, another combination. And yeah, it just seems sensible. And you're thinking, why wasn't Gatlin doing this towards the end of his tenure? Just picking some of the best players in their best positions. I'm interested to see how Ellis Mee goes, because Ireland have obviously had a very good experience against a debutant wing in the England game, when Cade Murley obviously had some really tough moments that were quite influential in the game. I'm not trying to bag him there. He had some great moments as well, but you could see the inexperience when he misjudged a few of those kicks, and that'll be the challenge for me. But he is a big, tall guy, 6'4", I think. I was playing him in Nottingham in the Championship just last season. It's been a meteoric rise for him. So he'll be hoping to continue that in Cardiff. Look, Ireland are still major favourites. I think the margin has come in slightly down from 25 to 22, but and you can see why when you go through the pack and go head on head and the quality and what they've done in their careers, etc. But it's a better Wales team, and I think they will produce a better performance.
I'm certain they will. I would imagine, just because it's a more fundamentally sound team, as you suggest, like. Look, so the way I've seen it for a couple of weeks is that it's their first home game in the Six Nations, and if it had still had been Gatland, I don't think it would have been a particularly intimidating place to go. I'm not saying Ireland would be intimidated anyway. You know what I mean? It wouldn't have been the cauldron that it is going to be now, because there's going to be a sense of a clean slate of nothing to lose. Knowing, like Matt Sherrod, who comes from a background of teaching, is a little bit like the sub teacher here, where he's got three games, he's going to go back to Cardiff. People can just enjoy this for what it is, enjoy watching the likes of Ellis Mee. And I think the place is going to be bloody rocking. And I'd imagine for the first 20 minutes, half an hour, maybe even the first half, this could be a close game. Like, I think the handicap is actually too wide, Mer. Like, I thought 25 or so was wide anyway, but even for the moment, I think 22 is wide. As a handicap, it's one of those where if Ireland pulled away and won by that margin in the end, you're like, yeah, that sort of makes sense. But I don't know, before a ball is kicked, I'm like, Jesus, it just feels like a long way to get to that point. If we were to focus on one element of Ireland's performance, Mer, where I think they would be tested here to an extent that we probably wouldn't have if Gatlin had remained in situ, it's their defence, which we have definitely spoken about on the pod, but maybe not to the extent as, or the same extent as we have their attack and some of that fluidity that's returned since even November. And somebody, sorry, I'm just getting the email up here. Kevin McCarthy was in touch with yourself with this very point, really. He said, I'd be interested in your thoughts on Ireland's defence so far in the Six Nations. I was at the Scotland game and thought the D was unbelievable. Hardly conceded a line break all day. It appeared to my uneducated eye to be closer to Leinster's blitz than the week before against England. What did you think?
There probably is a slight increase in the aggression. I don't think it's at Leinster's scale and certainly not as consistently anyway. But you can see that some of the players, it's probably more in their instinct now to go hard. And even the one time when they like visibly and most memorably got cut open for the, when Blair Kinghorn nearly scored and Jamison Gibson-Park made an amazing try-saving tackle with low covering really well as well. That was when Henshaw, on first phase from a scrum, goes all out and doesn't get it right and gets beaten by the pass and the movement from Hugh Jones, which was beautiful by Scotland, but he would obviously love to have that one back again defensively. He went for an intercept and wasn't able to pick off the ball. So maybe that's a bit of an overlap. I don't know. But generally, I think Ireland are slightly less aggressive, and yet other traits, like ignore line speed for a while, e.g. the barge turnover. I mentioned Jack Conan. There was one against Scotland out on the touchline where he just blasts straight through Finn Russell, who loses that one-on-one contest, and Ireland get a really great turnover. And they've brought more of that into their game. They've brought more of making every single breakdown a just a shit fight and making it scrappy every single time. They're line out of Maldi, which myself and James Tracy spoke about in depth on one of the midweek pods, has been absolutely outstanding. So actually sometimes both teams so far haven't really got massive chances to launch into their attack at all, because Ireland have made it scrappy from the line out delivery, or they've actually turned a few mauls over and made it frustrating in that way. So all those things have been good. And yet Easterby will be really frustrated with the finish to both games. It's kind of easy to write off and they go, Ireland won anyway. They got a bonus point. But that kind of stuff really pisses off coaches like him, where it's largely a mental thing and it's a switch off thing. And if you look at it now, they've conceded, what, 5 tries already in this championship. In 2023, when they won the Grand Slam, they only conceded 6. The year after, when they retained the championship, they only conceded 7. So they're going to have to do some seriously good work to keep it to 6 or 7 in this championship. And, you know, that might actually make a difference. If the France game doesn't go well, those switch-offs might make a difference when it comes down to it on the final weekend. So there's enough there for him to have lit a fire underneath them. And whether Wales can do damage with a week under Sherritt, who knows? Maybe they will. I think they'll probably use their kicking game a bit more smartly, with a bit more consideration, and try and shape Ireland a bit more in that way. But I think we will still have plenty of those highlight moments. There was Jackal turnovers at key times against Scotland as well. Those classic Irish. Peter O'Mahony had one in the first half. You had Beelum, you had Conan doing it in the second half as well. So, yeah, they're chipping in lots of highlight moments, and it has been really good. I totally agree with Kevin. But there's still room to improve when you're giving away those soft scores at the end of games.
Like, Wales's combined yardage across their two games is almost negligible, and their attack has been among the worst I've ever seen. I was speaking about this with... I can't remember. We do so many pods a week now. I can't remember which one it was. But basically, like... Kieran Kennedy last week, where... I watched back the Italy game, like, and it, like, off second phase, you'd have, like, their second pot of forwards hadn't even formed, and Thomas Williams is taking the ball. So, like, there's no element of deception about it at all. And I think against Italy, in the first half, they had 13 first phase attacks for a combined 1 meter or something along those lines. So, like, it was genuinely appalling. And I know that Sherritt has only been in there a couple of days, almost literally. But he has such an eye for attack, and particularly launch plays, set plays, that, like, it's impossible not to imagine them making more of a dent than they have in the last two games. They'll look to get the ball wide as well, and I think having a distributor, like a natural distributor like Thomas, will help that. He will equally help their kicking game more, because Anscombe is really adept at those dinky kicks in behind, cross fielders, that sort of thing. Like, whereas I think Thomas will actually take a bit of pressure off him when it just comes to clearing their lines, exits, etc. And as you mentioned at the top, there just seems to be more of a balance to them overall. Are you roughly in line with the handicap here? Are you just happy to see, would you just be happy to see an Irish victory? Like, is that what it comes down to?
I'd be surprised if they don't get a bonus point and win it well in the end. I do agree that there'll be a battle there. I think Ireland's ability not to give Wales that sniff of an upset will be really important, whether that's in the first 20 or whether that's coming towards half time or just after half time. All those kind of key battlegrounds in the 80 minutes are going to be crucial. But, like, Ireland should be kicking on and driving their momentum forward, and again, they're very internally focused. It's been good so far, it has, and there's been loads of excellent stuff, but probably hasn't, you know, been complete yet. They haven't finished out an 80 minutes, and that'll be a big thing for them this weekend. So I think their favouritism is justified. The form, the individual form of players, and the collective strength. I think it'll be Wales that focus on striking off their set pieces really well, nail a couple of cool plays to surprise Ireland and kick well. But there's only so much damage you can do with that. And I think Ireland overall, that 23 is much stronger.
Mm. It's also a nice idea in theory to talk about going to width or playing with more expression. Like, you have to earn that right as well. And man for man across those front eight, it's going to be difficult for them to do that, you'd imagine. We will see how it goes. I'm looking forward to it nonetheless, Mer. And safe travels. I mean, you've got another several hours in the airport, I guess, before wheels up. But best of luck, and I hope you actually make it to Wales at the second time of asking.
Yeah, I will. Well, Bristol first of all, and that's the first step, and then up to Cardiff tomorrow, and then back to Bristol on Sunday for that Ireland A game, which, yeah, I am looking forward to. Kieran Frawley's the one who goes back, and that's, again, not a big surprise, is it, really? He needs to get a game, and yeah, it's mad. He's kind of almost back to square one. He was, you know, playing for the Ireland A team in 2022, wasn't it? And then he's had a few kind of rises, and then I suppose this is a frustrating period for him, because Prendergast has just come straight in and swooped up the ranks and is doing really, really well, and Crowley's backing him up. So it's another chance for him to remind everyone of his quality. In a, the back line around him is gigantic. You look at like Bolton, Hugh Gavin, Postlethwaite, O'Brien Daly, they're all physical guys, they're all tall, so that's going to be beneficial. And Deegan captains a pack that has plenty of punch and plenty of, you know, exciting potential in all the players there. And even Tom O'Toole going again as a loose head is interesting. So I think that game is going to give us loads to chat about on Monday's pod. Of course, the other Six Nations games are going to be intriguing as well. Scotland, England in particular. Cannot wait to see how that goes, because while Ireland are going well, this championship, it's not even at the halfway point yet, and it's only going to get better from here.
Who do you fancy there, actually, between England and Scotland?
Oh, probably England.
Mm. Surely they've got to just get it done at some point. And yeah,
Finn Smith made a click. Finn Smith seemed to make a click better. So I think he'll make them a better team. Not to heap too much on his shoulders, but I just thought Scotland were very disappointing again against Ireland, and it's a big way to pick themselves up. And just given the recent history as well, England, they've got to win one of them, don't they?
Especially at, like, surely you've got to ride the crest of the wave created by that win over France as well. If, like, it's strange insofar as how much hinges on this game, I would say, for Portwick, because if you win it and you're firmly in the championship race and suddenly everything is looking rosy, if you lose it, it's almost like you're actually under pressure despite an unbelievable win last time out. It's just like, well, what's the point of this? This is going nowhere. Mad one. Should be a good weekend, Murr. Enjoy it, and we will catch you on Monday.
Cheers, Gav.
Thanks a million to everybody at home as well. It's the $42.com/extra if you want to sign up to all of our additional pods. I said chat to you Monday on Murr. We'll actually be chatting immediately after the game in Cardiff for our post-match pod for subscribers. So you can catch that by going to the rug, or excuse me, 42.ie/subscribe. Have a great one, everybody. We'll catch you either on Saturday night or on Monday or this time next week. Take it easy in the meantime. The boys in the better land. Drivers got names for 52 double barrels.